Hey there, it's Kaysunga, and I have a really cool announcement for y'all. Headspace is now offering mental health coaching in the Headspace app. You can connect with a trained expert for live, text-based one-on-one support on your time from anywhere. Whether they're helping you cope with daily stress and anxiety or supporting you through big life events like loss or relationship hurdles, your coach will draw from clinically validated tools to help you reach any mental health goals. You can text a mental health coach for just $99.99 a month. Just sign up on the Headspace app or at headspace.com/coaching.
Imagine a guy who appears to have it all. A professional football player, a successful entrepreneur, a lifestyle influencer, a best-selling author, millions of social media followers, and money in the bank. And all before he turned 33. This was Lewis Howes.
Where are you? My place is literally, it's a 3-minute walk from here though. So I just.
If something could be accomplished, Lewis did it. What people didn't know was that there was a pain he was walking around with that lived deep within him since childhood. All this external success would suppress it for a little while, but nothing could make it go away completely. This pain would pop up when he least expected it, which in the end caused him to finally be honest and come face to face with a secret he'd kept hidden for so long.
Yeah, so I just turned 29, or I think it was 29, and my best friend Matt, we were playing basketball a lot just to get out and here in LA. And when we'd play basketball on the mean streets of West Hollywood, it'd be just a bunch of like 20-year-olds, 18-year-old kids, like just trying to play basketball, but everyone tossed trash on this court, right? Stupid stuff, but for whatever reason, the dumbest things would trigger me. Where they would say something to me and I would want to fight them. I would push them, I would, you know, elbow them, whatever it is, I would get reactive. And one time I got in a fight with a guy where, you know, it was bad. Like he headbutted me and then I reacted and I hit him and it was just like, you know, blood all over the courts, the whole thing. And I remember shaking, trembling, because I don't remember the last time I got in a fight. And I remember just being so angry, like screaming and running back to my place, shaking the whole way there. I get into my bathroom and I'm like washing my hands and I'm looking at my face. I don't even recognize myself. I'm looking in the mirror and I'm like, who are you? I kept saying it to myself, like, who are you? What is wrong with you? Why are you doing this? Even though I was like, had made millions of dollars and, you know, was this former pro athlete and like whatever, had this brand online, in this image, there was something inside of me that was struggling and suffering. And I didn't know what it was. I was just triggered by everything. And I felt like everyone was out to get me. Everyone was trying to use me. Everyone was trying to abuse me. That was the feeling I had.
After that game, Lewis's best friend came up to him. They'd been college roommates, teammates in professional football, and frequently played on the basketball court together. But that day, his friend Matt looked at him in a different way. Lewis's anger was no longer something he wanted to be around.
That was like even a bigger wake-up call. Like my best friend was like, you need to get some help. What if I hurt this guy? Like, my life could be over. What if, you know, he hurt me? What if someone had a knife and they stabbed, like, whatever.
Right.
Like, something bad could have really happened. Luckily, it didn't. Now let me go find out what's wrong, what I need to work on, what I need to improve on. And so I started seeing everyone. I started seeing all these therapists, going to workshops. I went to one workshop, and I didn't think anything was wrong with me, really. I was like, I've got it all figured out. I'm doing great things. I'm making money. I've got this. Like, but I'll keep doing the work and seeing if anything comes up for me. And after this, half of this workshop is done, after about 3 days, we start addressing everything from our past in the first few days. We start talking about everything that hurt us from childhood until this moment. I was like addressing them and talking about them in front of this group of people. And I felt like, you know, I've talked about everything. I've shared everything. I have nothing that I've not shared. All the things I'm insecure about, vulnerable about, I shared it. And then the trainer was like, okay, we're moving forward to create a better future for ourselves. But if there's anything you haven't shared yet that you need to share, now's the moment. Because if there's anything you've held on to, you can't go create your best life, essentially, with pain from the past without addressing it. And for whatever reason, like, that like triggered me to be like, okay, is there anything else? And I was like, well, what about that thing I think about every single day that I've never told anyone?
From Headspace Studios, this is The Gift of Forgiveness, a podcast filled with inspiring stories from those who've overcome the unforgivable. I'm Catherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. On this show, we're telling people's stories as truthfully as possible. Please take care while listening. Sometimes you might feel uncomfortable or anxious. If that happens, I encourage you to pause and take some deep breaths. Some of you may have heard of Lewis Howes from his days as an athlete. Others, because of his best-selling book and hit podcast, The School of Greatness. The podcast has been downloaded more than 100 million times. He's turned his name into a brand. A brand that stands for self-improvement and self-reflective ambition. And the glue that holds Lewis's brand together is his incredible story of how he got to where he is today. It's been far from easy. On this show, we're telling people's stories as truthfully as possible. Sometimes you might feel uncomfortable or anxious. If that happens, I encourage you to pause and take some deep breaths. I say this at the top of every episode because they're all emotional and raw. But in this episode, we'll be discussing childhood sexual abuse. Please take care while listening. Back in the workshop, Lewis was about to stand up and share the secret that he'd never told anyone about the pain he'd held on to for 25 years.
And I was like, well, what about that thing I think about every single day that I've never told anyone, which was being sexually abused when I was 5.
So you had not told anyone about it?
No one, yeah. And at this time, I think I'm 30 years old. And so I just stood up, and I just realized, like, if I don't share this now, I may never share it. And I stand up, and I just start sharing the entire story for the first time in this group of about 40 people. There was men and women in the group, maybe 35, 40 people. And I tell the story about being sexually abused by a man that I didn't know. He was probably 16 or 17 years old. It was at the babysitter's house after kindergarten. I would go there after school because my parents were working multiple jobs. And I would go there, I'd play, I'd hang out. And then one day, I remember the son was there and he took me into the bathroom and he sexually abused me. And I remember vividly everything. Even in this moment telling you, I remember the smell, the taste, the room, the experience, everything. And I shared the story standing up in front of the room, but I couldn't look anyone in the eyes because I was so ashamed of what I was saying. I was so ashamed of myself. And I was so afraid of the judgment that people would have on me and how people would think about me. And I remember sitting down in my seat and just like erupting with tears, just like I could not control, like from my toes, like the emotion just came out of me, everything. And thank goodness there was two women on both sides of me that were just like hugging me and crying. But I couldn't even look into people's eyes. And after a couple moments, I ran out of the room because I was just like, I couldn't stop crying. I was insecure. I was afraid of what people were thinking. And I was just embarrassed. I was just embarrassed of the whole thing. And I didn't want people to see me cry. I was still like ashamed. I ran out of the room. A few minutes later, someone taps me on the shoulder. I'm outside of the conference center now, and someone taps me on the shoulder, and it's a man, and I turn around. He's hugging me, and he pulls me away from the hug. He looks me in the eyes. He's holding my shoulders. He's like, you're my hero. This is probably a 50-something-year-old man. He's like, you're my hero. He's like, I'm 50-something years old. I've got 3 kids and a wife, and my wife doesn't know. This happened to me when I was 11. And he told me the whole story for the first time at 50-something. And I was just like, what? I thought I was the only one this happened to.
I want to pause here because understanding this moment is so crucial to understanding Lewis's forgiveness journey. He spent his entire life carrying around this shame and thinking that if he told the story of his sexual abuse, people would see it as a flaw or a weakness and not respect him. But that isn't what happened at all. Instead, by sharing his story, other people saw him as strong, brave, and resilient. It also humanized him and helped the other men in the group come forward with their stories.
And then one by one, all the men of the room came out and told me just a story about something that happened to them. Not everyone was sexually abused, but other men were. And they opened up about that, and other men said that they had other challenges. And we just had this, like, crazy... It was one of the craziest moments of my life, just all these men opening up and being vulnerable. And that's what got me down the whole journey of just doing this work, talking about it more. And it took me a couple of years where I was talking about it, where I couldn't talk about it without getting, like, insecure or nervous or stuttering or stumbling, because I was just still afraid to talk about it. And I realized, for me, what helped me learn about forgiveness was when I could finally speak about something without it having control of me, without it having my power, without me being insecure or afraid or embarrassed, that's when I've learned to forgive. It's when we can't speak about something, we're afraid to speak about it, it has power over us and we haven't forgiven fully, in my experience. So that's why it's like, I try to speak about it as much as I can, not to shine a light on, like, this wound that I had that still hurts me, but more of, like, an example of how to overcome something challenging in your life and how to forgive something. And I've never seen this person again. I don't even know if this person's alive. They could be. I could go down and track down who it was, probably, but I'm like, in my mind, I've seen myself hug this person many times and say, I forgive you.
Well, at what point did you reach a place where you were able to do that?
I think once I started telling all my family members one by one.
So after that moment of sharing it in
moment,
that group.
At that moment, everyone was like, you need to tell more people. This is, like, life-changing. You need to tell people. I was like, F no. No one else needs to know this. Right. Like, this is a safe space where you can't share this with anyone. I was, like, so afraid. But then I realized the power of how me being vulnerable and opening up to someone else, how it allowed them to be vulnerable and start to heal and start to forgive the person that sexually abused them. Right. So I was like, oh, this is bigger than me. This is bigger than my embarrassment, my fear, my insecurity. Like, this is a part of my mission now so that I can help other men heal, other people heal. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I still need to tell my friends. Because if I can't tell them and be open and vulnerable, like, it still has power over me. I told my friends. And then I said, crap, I feel like I need to tell more people. And so I did it on my podcast. I did a whole episode on my sexual abuse.
What is up, guys?
We dug up that episode of Lewis's podcast. The episode is titled, What Sharing My Childhood Rape Taught Me About Being a Loving, Vulnerable, Free Man. Lewis invited his friend on to facilitate the conversation.
Open up to you guys about an experience that I had. I was sexually abused or raped by another man. And I was 5 years old. I'll kind of walk through a brief story of it. I was 5 years old. And, you know, my parents were working full-time jobs. There was four of us kids.
Yeah.
And so after
telling school, his story changed Lewis's life. He realized that forgiveness is about vulnerability and taking off that mask of masculinity. His story has influenced other people too. Many listeners who'd also been holding on to secrets of their own wrote to him, feeling less alone and finally beginning to free themselves from their traumas.
Hundreds of essays came in from men opening up about being sexually abused for the first time in the next week, and it continues to be something that impacts men. So I realized, like, crap, I gotta do more work on this. So I wrote a book about it. I was just like, I was still scared of it. So it was me and I needed to keep doing the work until I'm not afraid of it anymore. To where I can have the conversation and just with anyone talking over coffee and it's not going to upset me anymore. Not saying it's okay, not saying it was, you know, something I ever want to happen again, but that it just doesn't have to have control over me right now.
When was that moment for you when you realized you had actually forgiven?
I think probably after... like a couple of years, like, of opening up about it. It probably took a few years until I I can't remember the exact moment, but probably just when I had a conversation like this with someone where I wasn't like, you know, talking about it,
right.
Scared, insecure. Mm-hmm. And when I finally learned to let that go, it was like this sense of peace that I never felt, the sense of love for myself that I never felt, this sense of love for the people that I never felt. But I was holding on to this for 25 years, and it was kind of like shaped my life.
Right. Well, there are a lot of people, and I'm sure there are some people that are listening, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who wrote in after you did your podcast who have experienced sexual abuse that hold on to it and never say anything as the 50-year-old
person.
People
die with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What would you say to people who are listening or who are have had something similar happen to them?
I would say you don't need to share it with the world like I did. You don't need to like write books and, you know, do public interviews about it. But I think it's for your own peace and your own well-being and mental health and spiritual health. I think it's really important for you to share with someone, mm-hmm. whether it be a spiritual figure in your life, your partner, or even just journaling about it. Like writing it down is powerful. Even if that's all you do is write a letter to the person who sexually abused you. I think just doing a ritual of release, some type of release, is powerful. Because when we hold on to it, then it affects us in every other area of our life.
Right.
And it manifests in other areas. So sharing it with someone else was one of the most powerful things for me.
We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, this series is produced by Headspace Studios. Headspace has thousands of hours of meditation, mindfulness, movement, and sleep content. The best tool you have is your mind, so take care of it. Learn more at headspace.com. For so long, his abuse had power over him. Now, after sharing his story, Lewis's solution for combating that fear was to lean into it, to disarm the power and shame by talking about it as much as he could, all with the hope of not only being honest with himself, but also helping others who may have experienced something similar. After that, he could approach other issues in his life without being controlled by his childhood abuse.
I think I was finally like, okay, now I have a tough situation where I can actually practice what I've learned.
Right.
I've learned all this stuff. Let's see if I'm actually like ready for the challenge.
Yeah. I talked to you about forgiveness. I think we decided it's about a year and a half ago.
Is that when it was?
I know.
Man,
it's crazy.
I've had to forgive a lot of other things since then.
Oh my God. Please tell me.
Oh man. Well, you want to go into it?
Yes, I mean, I do.
I went through a breakup about a little over a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the breakup was very intense, to the fact where the person I was dating ended up going on like a interview spree of like bashing me and talking bad about me on podcasts and on social media and reaching out to my team and my friends and my family, and was really hurt by something. And I apologized, and I owned everything, and it didn't matter. You know, we didn't have a perfect relationship, and things were a little messy, and we were in therapy and all this different stuff, and it didn't work out. And I apologized for my part of the relationship. There was never an apology on her side of the relationship for what had happened, for the things that she did to hurt me. Mm-hmm. It was just, you were bad, you were wrong, you did something that hurt me, and now I'm gonna go make you look bad. The challenge was, this was someone that I knew very intimately and I was with for 4.5 years, that just went on a rampage, essentially. Right. So it was like a deeper frustration.
A deeper hurt.
A deeper hurt. Well, I was just like, you know, I've helped with so much of your career, your life, your health. I've, you know, helped you grow your business. I've helped everything.
You loved each other.
Yes. So I had to learn how to forgive someone who constantly tried to put me down and speak negative about me publicly and to my friends, family, all that stuff for a year, and truly learn to love and forgive.
How?
Very hard. Yeah. It's very hard. I think it was the greatest gift for me because I think I needed it. My fear was always people doubting me, people So people spreading rumors or lies about me, people trying to smear my name or something I've built, and people trying to take me down. It was like always a fear of mine, but it never happened. So it was like my greatest fear happened, and I needed that. I needed to experience the fear and the feeling of like helplessness. Mm-hmm. Like there's nothing I can control of what people are saying about me. There's nothing I control about someone's actions, what they're doing. I can't control people. Mm-hmm. All I can control is my own thoughts, my own feelings. And I wanted to respond. I never responded to anything. I never like try to defend anything. I could do these things, but it's what's it gonna do for me?
So you truly let it go.
I truly had to experience a lot of frustration and anger and resentment for many months.
Well, what did you do with that?
I was like, luckily I've interviewed the most brilliant spiritual thought leaders, the most amazing therapists in the world. So I started reaching out right away. I had amazing therapists that were like coaching me and guiding me and allowing me to experience my experience. Not shutting it down, not telling me I'm bad or wrong, not telling me I need to forgive, but just allowing me to experience my experience, which I think we talked about is what I think we need to do, is like experience the emotions first.
Yes.
It will be helpful, not stuffing it, not mm-hmm. shutting it down. And I did everything. I mean, I was like doing therapy. I was writing letters to myself. I was writing letters to my future self. I was writing letters to that person. I was...
Did you ever send any of them to her?
No. I was never advised to send them. I wrote them, and I remember writing a few different letters. One about all the things I'm grateful for this person. Even if I wasn't grateful, what are the things I could find that I was grateful for? I wrote everything I was grateful for. I wrote everything I was also angry about, because I didn't want to suppress those feelings. And then I wrote all the things I was thankful for, and I'm letting you go. And then I wrote that many times. And what I would do is I would fold it up, and I'd burn the letters, and then I'd bury the letters. And there was something about this ritual mm-hmm. of writing, expressing my feelings and thoughts, burning it, and then burying the ashes. For me, that was very healing, therapeutic, and a sense of completion, as opposed to this like lingering feeling. And every time it would like come back up where it was like too intense, I would write another letter until I felt like at peace.
So you did this over a year duration?
I only did this for maybe like a few weeks of like writing the letters mm-hmm. and burning and burying. I kept, for whatever reason, I had this like grace or peace or faith where I just kept saying to myself, this is happening for a reason. I'm gonna look back at this in a year and I'm gonna know what the reason is. Like a year from now, it was literally like a year ago, year and a month ago when this happened. I was like, I'm gonna look back on a year from now and I'm gonna have hindsight now. I kept saying like, I'm gonna have hindsight now as if I'm a year out. And all the things I gained because of this, the gift that this gave me, the growth that I have, the love I cultivated, the healing I got to create, the relationships I built, I just kept focusing on all the good that was gonna come my way. The experience I'd have by going through this, like most people have never been through something like this. And that was truly like how I got through it, was having that hindsight now mentality and that faith and that trust, and also reaching out for support. And then at that point, I was just like, okay, I'm still alive, everything's fine, like I'm just having hindsight now. And what's the lesson I need to learn every single day? How can I dive deeper into forgiveness of myself, of this person? And it was a beautiful gift to learn how to forgive someone who continually tries to hurt and abuse you mm-hmm. or make you wrong or whatever it is. And that was this last year. It was beautiful. It was painful and beautiful at the same time.
A lot of emotions. What do you think was like the final moment where you got to a place where you were like, okay, we're good?
Well, I'm good on my end. I think it was a journey. It probably took like, I think I remember, because every like couple of weeks there'd be something where someone would message me and say, hey, they're posting about you again. They did an interview talking bad about you again. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be reminded of it a lot mm-hmm. and it would kind of trigger me. I'll be like, can't this person just let this go and like move on with their life? But there was a point where someone messaged me and said like, okay, this person did another interview, check this out. And I was just like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't, okay.
That's the moment that you realized you had forgiven.
Yeah, I was just like, well, that sucks, but there's nothing I can do.
Right.
And I don't care. And I'm focused on my mission, and my journey, and my life. and the relationship that I'm in and everything like that. So
I find that interesting because I think for a lot of people, if you go, whether it's a year that you're referring to or several years or months, whatever it is, and then when you get to that place where something that used to trigger you heavily no longer has that same effect on you and doesn't cause that anxiety or nervousness reaction, whether it's seeing the person, hearing about the person, hearing from the person, that there isn't that underlying sense of, you know, tension, that that's when you really, that's when you know that you've been able to practice forgiveness. Mm-hmm. That's how I know in my life when I stopped having that and I was like, okay, now, and it seems like it was similar for you of just being like things that used to really fire you up and get you upset and then something, it no longer had that same effect on you.
Yeah, it took some time. It wasn't like overnight. I didn't just like let it go. Here's the thing. Just because I've forgiven someone doesn't mean I'm going to be their best friend.
Well, that's actually a very interesting topic that was brought up a lot was this sense of if you have forgiven someone and you don't allow them back in your life, whether it's, you know, somebody that you dated or a close friend or someone in business or a family member, if you don't bring them back in your life and welcome them, does that mean that you haven't forgiven? And I used to think, yeah, that means that I haven't forgiven. If I don't want to go back to the exact way that my relationship was or my friendship was, then actually I haven't forgiven. And what I've realized through doing this book and also talking to people like yourself is that having healthy boundaries, which as you get older, become a really big theme. Yeah. You can forgive someone and not go to dinner with them. You can still have forgiven them. You don't have to see them again, hang out with them. You can have those healthy boundaries to protect yourself. But some people feel like, oh, you're still resentful. You're still angry. That's actually not forgiveness.
Yeah. I think there's levels. I mean, I was recently at a charity event. It was a man's mission is to like end sex trafficking. There's millions of young boys and girls who are sold over and over again for sex. And one of the people said that, like, yeah, there was a woman who got away from the person that had owned her, I guess, and was selling her for sex. And she went back and she forgave the person and washed his feet. For me, I was just like, this is a crazy level of forgiveness, right? That's a Jesus level of forgiveness, right? And I'm not saying you need to do that. And I'm not saying you need to do that and then hang out with the person and, like, be the best friend. But I think if you can get to the point of showing an act of love and forgiveness, whatever that act is for you, and that doesn't mean you need to wash the person's feet who did the harm to you. But if you can just in your mind say, I love this person, I appreciate them for the lessons, and I'm letting them go, I think that's okay. You don't need to go hang out with them. Mm-hmm. So it's just planning. It's figuring out where do I want to spend my time and energy that serves me and that serves the world the best.
Right. Yeah, I think it was an interesting for me to hear. And I, you know, I talked to some people who never saw a person again who hurt them. But I think that especially when it comes to friendships and relationships and, you know, those are oftentimes the kind of hurt and betrayal that really sting and cut the deepest. People have very different views on, you know, well, does that mean that you're still angry? Does that mean that you're still carrying around resentment? If you have boundaries, does that mean that you're actually not doing the work of forgiveness? So it's interesting to hear.
I think there's levels of resentment, right?
Right.
Even if like a little level of resentment is, I mean, you can forgive someone and still think about them and say, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
And then move on.
Right.
Learning how to forgive benefited Lewis's life in so many ways. He found peace within himself and also became more emotionally aware. Processing his childhood sexual abuse taught Lewis about the interconnectedness of his traumas.
That moment in my life shaped a trigger in me of abuse. That anytime a friend did something that hurt me, I felt like I was being sexually abused. Anytime a business partnership did something, I felt like I was being sexually abused. Anytime an intimate partner did something that I felt like was abusive, it was bringing up sexual abuse, feeling the trigger. So that moment when I was five, I truly can say I've healed that moment. But the 25 years of being reacting towards a trigger of sexual abuse was something that I'm constantly working on today mm-hmm. in different areas, business, intimate relationships, right. like things like that. But that person, like, I've forgiven, I've let go of, and that's like, yeah, in the past. But now it's just like learning how to undo patterns of 25 years.
Right. Do you feel like your forgiveness journey is an ongoing one, or was it a one and done?
I think it's a constant journey, and I think we should be, I don't wish bad things to happen to people, mm-hmm. but I also know the amount of growth it's given me for every challenging situation
right.
in my life. And I don't wish it for anyone, but I also don't want people to go through an easy life so they don't understand this, because I think when we go through it, we can also have compassion,
yeah.
like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think also having that compassion with everyone, I think your story is a great example of, you talk about, you know, everyone around you at this point in your life where you, you know, were open about the sexual abuse mm-hmm. that you had experienced, that everyone who would have looked at you in your life would have thought, he's making money, mm-hmm. he's successful, he has friends, he has people around him, he has a perfect life. Mm-hmm. And the reality was that you were in a lot of pain mm-hmm. and hurt, angry, getting in fights with people, yeah. like you were almost like a ticking time bomb. Yeah. And
triggered by abuse. Everything. So it yeah. was like, I was very loving and nice until it was like you hit the trigger. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand it until I started to heal the process and right. go through the healing process
right.
and learn tools. So now I understand like when something's happening. So when the person I dated started doing this, I was like, oh, now I have the tools to actually not react, to not try to respond, to not try to hurt someone else mm-hmm. in response to this, mm-hmm. and to try to really take a deep breath every time I feel triggered, really come from a place of love and compassion.
So whenever you have any moments of trigger, you try to come from a place of love, but obviously that's easier said.
If I have meditated in the morning, like we talked about, yeah. if I have meditated first thing in the morning, it's almost like I'm bulletproof the rest of the day mm-hmm. on any trigger, whether it's someone in the honking me on the street right. or it's whatever, business thing or relationship thing. It's almost like I'm zen all day. Mm-hmm. It's when I forget sometimes where I might get defensive for a moment or react, and then it always comes back to me within a few minutes of me being defensive or something where I'm like, this is not going to serve me in any way. Mm-hmm. This is not going to help my mission, which is to impact people. It's not going to help me with feeling good. It's not going to help my health. It's not going to help me. Mm-hmm. So then I quickly shift out of it.
Aside from meditation, because I think that's an amazing thing, and also what I've found is can be to others an intimidating thing, but also you're the first person to say a life-changing thing,
yeah.
To be able to have that practice. What are the other tools that you would give to people who can relate, as I can relate, to these trigger moments where you, you know, feel like you're smooth sailing, everything yeah. is good, and then you have this one thing that happens. It might not even seem like a big deal, but then you go back.
It's something. I think a future self visualization daily is really powerful. And so what do I mean by that? I mean by, this may sound weird, but I imagine in my mind my future self, my greatest self, walking up and looking at me, like a mirror of myself. But the ideal image of love, the ideal image of light, of kindness, of compassion, of, you know, following through on his habits, like everything. The person that I want to be as myself, I imagine myself looking at that person and staring at his eyes and saying, what is this person doing? What is this person doing that I'm not doing right now? And how can I get closer to this person? And I put myself through this visualization daily of becoming my best future self and seeing if I can get there closer now. And just saying, how would he react? How would he respond? What actions would he take? And I just try to think about that. And I just try to remind myself, is this my future best self in this moment?
Right.
And most of the time it's not. And then I just try to shift quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay.
Appreciate it.
Love it.
I decided to go in right away from the beginning.
Thanks for listening. To hear more from Lewis, check out his podcast, The School of Greatness. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of mindfulness and meditation content for you, including meditations on forgiveness, grief, noting, and more. Download it today and try it for free. The Gift of Forgiveness is hosted and executive produced by me, Catherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. You can find my book, also called The Gift of Forgiveness, wherever books are sold. This episode was produced by Monique Laborde and Otis Gray. Sound design by Dan Kroll. From Headspace Studios, the executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogaway. This podcast is produced in partnership with Cadence 13.